The pandemic has caused $72 million in losses to Illinois State University. And during her State of the University speech, President Terry Goss-Kinsey says even with state and federal aid, ISU is still down $25 million. That story just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon. I'm Charlie Schlenker. There's a lot of buzz about an alleged abduction attempt near Illinois State University. It didn't happen, yet fear remains.
I can't fix that for our community if they don't want to believe when we're saying it. Just the evidence doesn't support it.
Police say do not take counsel from your fear. The mother of a missing ISU student complains other cases are getting more attention than her son. And the Central Illinois band The Way Down Wanderers talks about fatherhood addiction and their new album. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Less than 3 months into her tenure, Illinois State University President Terry Goss-Kinsey is applauding the efforts of the campus to deal with the challenges set by the pandemic. That happened during the annual State of the University speech. Goss-Kinsey also counts the cost of the pandemic.
Without a doubt, it takes all of us to successfully navigate COVID-19 on a university campus. While there's much positive news to share about how Illinois State has weathered the significant financial impact of the pandemic better than many other institutions, as of today, Illinois' financial loss incurred from COVID-19 through fiscal year 21 is approximately $72 million to date.
Goss-Kinsey notes some of that has been offset by grants and aid from internal and external sources, including the Governor's Emergency Education Relief Fund, the University COVID-19 Relief Fund, the Illinois Board of Higher Education, and the Red and White Scholarship Fund.
Like so many organizations, businesses, families, and individuals in this country, Illinois State is extremely grateful for the aid provided by our federal and state governments. But however generous that aid is, it will only cover about 65% of our anticipated COVID expenses, lost revenues, and refunds, which means we still, as of this time, have a loss of $25 million.
Goss-Kinsey also paints a picture of perseverance in the face of adversity and highlights some of the lessons of the pandemic that she says will help shape the future of the institution.
In many ways, we've become more effective collaborators working across campus in new, and I am sure lasting ways. And in many ways, we never would have imagined before COVID-19. We've learned how to leverage technologies in new ways to support teaching, learning, research and creative scholarship, and administrative operations. For example, through a collaboration between Student Affairs, the Office of Technology Solutions, and the Office of the Provost, the university distributed approximately 600 loaner laptops with funds from the GEER program. Those laptops supported students whether they were on campus or learning remotely. And the university has learned a lot about the value of virtual programs as we stream this event today. And we will continue to provide virtual programs, such as orientation for students and employees, alumni connectivity, which is actually a lot of fun to do Q&A with people from all across the country, and virtual events including a virtual 5K and homecoming. We have created new ways of experience traditions, such as move-in, welcome week, preview, commencement, and Festival ISU. The 4 days definitely allowed me to meet a lot more students out on the quad. In fact, students and families were so enthusiastic about the individualized attention they received during the Redbird Stage Crossing program that it'll be included as part of future commencement activities. And we continue to leverage creativity and innovation to provide care to our students through telehealth and telemental health services, giving them a level of privacy and accessibility that's critically important in these times.
ISU President Terry Goss-Kinsey cites the old adage to never waste a good crisis. She has also used the speech to again encourage people to get vaccinated. Campus vaccination rates continue to climb. The current rate for faculty and staff is 92%, up a point from last week, and 76% for all students, up a couple from last week. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's public media. Talk has been swirling on the Illinois State University campus about threats of attempted abductions and other violence. These did not happen, but what is clear is that many students don't feel safe and don't feel police are listening to their concerns. Eric Stock reports.
Melissa Ahrens is a sophomore at ISU. Ahrens says last year she wasn't afraid to walk alone on campus. But after hearing claims of violence in recent weeks, she's concerned to walk outside of the dining hall, especially after dark. Ahrens has armed herself with a knife and pepper spray.
The walk to and from Tri, there are no blue lights, aren't really that many street lights, and it's kind of like right next to a residential area, so it can be a little scary.
Ahrens and other students have been talking mostly on social media about their safety being at risk based on claims of violence and suspicious vehicles. Illinois State University sent out a campus alert last week to address these claims. It said police were actively investigating, but said the Normal Police Department confirmed there have been no abduction attempts. Anna Woods is a grad student in music at ISU. Woods says that message didn't put her mind at ease.
The school hasn't really talked about it a whole lot. I feel like they sent out a vague email, which I think puts more fear, especially for, you know, the females here on campus.
And threats of violence at the ISU campus are not only a concern for women. Harrison Gordon is a sophomore music business student. He says violence is the biggest safety threat on campus, but he says police don't seem to take it seriously.
They're a lot more focused on doing on like Saturday nights and Friday nights on things like busting parties or trying to give out drinking tickets than they ever are trying to protect our women in town from violence or sexual violence.
ISU Police Chief Aaron Woodruff says the abduction attempt report that fueled most of the students' concerns was based on a call from one female student who reported seeing someone run into an apartment building. Woodruff says he doesn't want to discount her fear or her interpretation of events, but he says an investigation by ISU and the Normal Police Department finds no evidence of an abduction attempt. Woodruff says if the community doesn't want to believe that, there's not much police can do.
That's a problem. I can't fix that. For our community if they don't want to believe when we're saying that just the evidence doesn't support it.
Brad Park is the community resource officer for the Normal Police Department. Park says Normal Police have nothing to prove or disprove about any safety threats on the ISU campus. Park says police have tried to diffuse students' fears about their safety, but he says social media makes it hard to control that message.
The messaging that goes out is kind of like a telephone game, you know, things have just get, you know, changed as the message goes along. And we just want to have a unified message with what we know and what we can provide.
Social media has amplified students' concerns about safety, but that can become an echo chamber. Nate Carpenter was the director of Convergent Media at ISU. He says it's hard to use social media as an accurate gauge.
Many people may be sharing the same incident, maybe talking about the same incident over and over and over again, to the extent that it feels like it's happening everywhere, where it may just be one isolated incident that's being shared throughout several different networks.
Carpenter says most of the online chatter about threats has been on social media channels that are mostly private, such as Snapchat and WhatsApp, the social media more popular among students. So it doesn't get the broader exposure through a more public site such as Facebook, where more people may see it and perhaps take the threats more seriously.
What I've been seeing with this issue and this incident over the past week is that there is a disconnect in consumption and production of media.
Carpenter says anyone who feels concerns about their safety shouldn't rely on social media. He says they should go to the authorities. But several students, including ISU sophomore Melissa Ahrens, say they don't believe talking to police will make much difference.
I would rather just call like somebody random from my floor than actually call 911.
ISU Police Chief Aaron Woodruff says he's concerned students are reaching conclusions based on bad information that he says preys on their anxieties and fears.
Unfortunately, if they're not following us and they're just following each other and missharing misinformation, then that kind of washes that out.
Woodruff says ISU PD uses a tiered system to communicate threats to the campus community. The department sends emergency alerts via text for imminent threats. For less immediate incidents, ISU will send out a crime advisory. The department will use social media for safety issues that are less specific to the campus, such as the recent fatal shooting at a mobile home park in North Normal. With reporting from Sarah Renardi and student reporter Jordan Mead, I'm Eric Stock.
Illinois State University President Terry Goss-Kinsey says she encourages everyone on campus to look out for themselves and to look out for each other. And she says if you see something, report it immediately. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The mother of missing Illinois State University grad student Jelani Day is wondering why his case isn't getting as much attention as that of Gabby Petito. Petito was reported missing September 11th. Her case has drawn national media attention and is being investigated by the FBI. Remains believed to be Petito were located September 19th and are currently undergoing a forensic identification. Day has been missing since August 24th. A body recovered September 4th from the Illinois River has yet to be identified. In this interview with Sarah Nardi, Carmen Bolden Day gives an update about her son's case.
It's at a standstill, in my opinion, since they found that unidentified body. It doesn't seem to me that they are pushing to continue to look for my son in the expectation that this unidentified body is him. The Bloomington police, who are still technically, it's in their jurisdiction in their case because Jelani's still out there and he's missing. So they should be assuming the role of finding him. They're hitting a lot of what they say are dead ends, so to say. I understand there are other crimes that they have to investigate, but it seemed like I only have this one detective, and I understand he has a life outside of his work. But once he stops, does that mean we stop looking for my son? So I am, it's just a frustration.
So are you being told by the Bloomington Police Department that this is an issue of manpower?
I have been told that. I have been told, Carmen, if we had detectives, we would do A, B, and C, and D. So it appears to me that they don't have enough manpower. One day I'm being told that, and then one day I'm being told, well, we've got 2 and 3 detectives, and then I'm being told, we'll call you back. The coroner that's supposed to be working on this dead body, they needed DNA. The Illinois State Police did come out and they took the DNA samples. But then they also wanted dental records. I found the information that they needed. They are now telling us that that is at a delay as well because they don't have the chemical. The state lab does not have the chemical that is needed to process the DNA. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but you would think by this being a state lab that they can collaborate with other state agencies or even different state agencies to see, hey, can we borrow some of this chemical? You would think they have some type of connections to get this chemical from somewhere.
So does it seem to you that since this body has been recovered from the Illinois River, that the people have reached the conclusion that this must be Jelani? And because they've concluded that the investigation into the case of your son has really fallen off?
Even though they say that's not the case, it's quite evident that it is because there's been a lack of enthusiasm, a lack of anything. I don't have anything. Peru, they're not telling me anything. I don't know anything. I don't know if it was their child. Maybe there would be an urgency on this. Maybe they would still be looking.
You've mentioned in some of your social media posts that you think that there might be a racial component to the way Jelani's case is being handled. Do you think that it would be handled any differently if this were the case of a missing female grad student with blonde hair and blue eyes?
I'm going to say if this had been a missing grad student that had blonde hair and blue eyes, period, this would have been a whole different situation. I don't think the gender made a difference. I think, and again, I just think that the fact that this is a Black male versus someone that was white, we get a whole different perspective of how it's being handled and how it's looked at.
And you've drawn attention on, again, on your social media posts to the disparity in the way that the case of a missing woman, Gabby Petito, who has blonde hair and blue eyes, has been handled in comparison to the way your son's case has been handled. Gabby's case is getting more media attention, and it's certainly getting more resources. How do you make sense of that as a mother and as a human being?
It's very hard to make sense of because it's like, they're telling me that my son isn't as important. And he is. He's just as important. Like, I'm not sitting in this seat and saying that I'm devaluing this young lady's life, because I can totally understand what her mother and her family is going through. I wouldn't even minimize their pain. I wouldn't do that. But do you not see us? Do you not see me? Do you not see my son? He is loved. He is wanted. He is important.
That was Carmen Bolden, mother of missing ISU grad student Jelani Day. A spokesperson for the Illinois State Police Division of Forensic Services said they cannot comment on open cases, but all DNA cases are a priority. Bloomington police say that while one detective is assigned to Day's case as a manager, other detectives are assigned as needed. BPD says at one point, five detectives were working the case. Carmen Bolden Day spoke with Sarah Nardi. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Fatherhood and addiction are two of the meaty subjects tackled on the new album from the Central Illinois Americana Quintet, The Way Down Wanderers. Band members Colin Krause and Austin Thompson speak with Daniel Musisi about More Like Tomorrow. Krause says in addition to the subject matter, The Way Down Wanderers added new flavors to their music.
One thing we do as writers is really try to let the song kind of dictate the sonic arrangement. So, you know, some songs just feel better with, you know, acoustic guitar and just a banjo and some vocalists. But then others feel like they yield more to, you know, a keyboard part or something more in terms of electric instruments. So we really like to let the song kind of determine where we go with it.
Everyone's tired. Everything is on fire. Everyone disagrees until the grief is in the seat right beside them. Everyone is outspoken, not open.
The album touches on acceptance or self-acceptance or self-forgiveness, joys and complexities of parenting, addiction and recovery. Are these new themes?
You know, I think we all went through a lot, you know, in between albums. A lot of time passes, so some of these themes are new. You know, for instance, since the last album, I'm really excited to be 3 years sober from alcohol and kind of accepting that identity and learning that it's something to be proud of. So, yeah, I think in this album, we've really allowed ourselves to be a little bit more vulnerable in terms of subject matter, but I hope that that's certainly can be more relatable to the listener, even if it's something that is very personal to me.
The vulnerability, I think, is something we've grown to be a little more comfortable with. With the third record, we've kind of just become more self-aware and okay with putting those things out there and just knowing that people relate.
Colin, you wrote a song named after a street here in Peoria. The song Parkside Drive has a pretty tough backstory.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that song really is, you know, very personal and special to me because it really does touch on my recovery process, which is an ongoing thing. You don't kind of wake up one day and, oh, you're recovered. Something that you just take one day at a time. So I was running a lot in Peoria and living on Main Street and Parkside Drive. So I was inspired to write that song just during meditations and running to kind of work some stuff out in a way.
I'm trying to let go. I should have ages ago.
And Austin, you write about parenting on this album. How has becoming a parent influenced your songwriting?
You know, yeah, it's really just changed my perception a little bit, just have a few deeper paths to dive down in terms of writing. You know, I try to just keep an equal balance, you know, in my writing between it being about the kids or just what this point in life has, you know, made me perceive other things in life as. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind.
There's something intriguing about albums whose name is not a song on the album. More Like Tomorrow is one of those albums. Can you talk a bit about the meaning of the title?
The title actually comes from a lyric in one of the tracks. The song is called Dark Marks. And I think for a while we were actually toying with naming the song More Like Tomorrow. But I just always called it Dark Marks, so we moved to that and we used it as the title, but really, it really can just, you know, mean so many things, like more like tomorrow.
But it's more like tomorrow.
Is when we get there, like we're still working and it's always a continuous thing in relation to some of the tracks.
I like to interpret the album as kind of this idea that progress is sometimes accepting that it's not going to happen right now. So for me, it means very literally, well, we'll try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thoughts and prayers, there's a layer unopened. And we all feel like the road is for warriors, that it holds no aura. Open doors, so many houses, I'll never feel at home in. Home is where you make it. I don't wanna sleep on it, just wanna lay you. Let the day fade away, song by song. All I need. Front door, feel the floor under my feet, paw prints on the concrete. I found somewhere to keep love that no one would take. Now I don't want to leave, hon, I just want to play.
That's Austin Thompson and Colin Krause of the Way Down Wanderers discussing their latest album, More Like Tomorrow, with Daniel Musisi. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.